I had sometimes, just to get the look of people, to drag me down to the village, begging for a bite to eat and hear them speak. It was like music to my ear. In particular, I was seized with desire for seeing Pierre, his prison friend. But how could I reach him? A request to speak to him would certainly be rejected, but coverage was not particularly strong. Maybe it could be easier than I thought. I plucked up my courage and walked down to the chambery. I knew which window belonged to Pierre's secluded cell. One dark night, when everyone was asleep, I crept outside and threw repeatedly sand against the small windows. The window opened and from the iron rods, was a head out sticking. It was Pierre. It did not need many words sooner than we understood each other. By means of a long rod I handed him a small highly hardened saw and a bottle of oil, and promised to return every night until he was ready to run. Night after night I went there and heard the saw persistent work. Finally, the seventh night, I saw two grid bars give way and my friend to get out through the opening. A more cordial embrace, I have never received or given. Now we were two, and life seemed to me suddenly worth living. I took Pierre to my hut and initiated him into hermit life's hardships and horrors. He was happy to find refuge with me, and we lived many years in perfect harmony with each other. But the joy was taken away from me. He once walked alone out hunting and never came back. Several months later I found his half-decomposed corpse, strong maimed. Probably he had been beaten by bears. Now, I was again alone and heartbroken. I could not bear it. I grabbed my rod and my bow and headed out on the hike. The parts unknown went my way. Sometime I was able to meet friendly people, but mostly I was considered for a thief, and I was in fact not much better. People shunned me and I them. Much of the violence generated at, by this time, was only an outbreak of bitterness that lay germinated in my mind. I have no murder on my conscience, but well, I could go many times furiously forward when I met a merchant or gentleman who treated me as superior or scornfully. My stake has striped many backs both blue and bloody. It felt like a relief for the internal tension of resentment and hatred I ever went and bore on. So it felt then. Later I have often regretted my wild rampage. Years passed during this roving life. I was getting old and frail, my back was bent, my face furrowed, my head bare, the matted beard reached down on the chest. I began to long to rest for both body and soul. On sore feet with a repentant bleeding heart, I reached the monastery gate. The monk was a pious man with a heart that felt sore for both spiritual and bodily distress. I gave him my confession as full as my memory could. It eased my burdened mind, it was like a heavy burden lifted. He put his hand on my head. "Poor brother," he said, "you have suffered much, your soul is more scarred than your bloody feet. Stay here in the monastery. Mother of God Chapel is a sanctuary, where the world's concern does not reach. Where you can add your agony down to the crucified's feet, where you get peace." This was done. The cell loneliness, in the chapel consecrated calm, my spirit the rest I pined for. And in the monastery library was open to me a new world of ideas and impressions. A wonderful peace spread over the few years I still had on this earth. The stormy life I brought with me, vanished away like something unreal that does not belong to me, and when death approached could I jubilant feel and know that it was to a brighter life I now raise my soul and mind. Part 3. We go even further back in time and open a book from the early 1300s. It is written with a rough and difficult to read, handwriting on Old French, at any provincial dialect. It is a variety of Occitan spoken by a minority of people in southern France, mostly in Provence. The notes are brief and not very coherent. It would be difficult for a stranger to these fragments make up a full image of the personality whose life they portray, but to me, who wrote them, they are sufficient for the memory to recall the image of the inflated but in fact very insignificant Knight Templar, Bertrand de C, which not far from Avignon, had a fortified castle. It is strange now, after 600 years, to look back on this ridiculous figure and know that it was me. But he was not only ridiculous, he was hard-hearted, and it is a widely severe deformity. The shimmer of ridicule I now find surrounding Bertrand's person was perhaps somewhat more which was due to timing conditions than something rooted in his character. The dying chivalry with its stilted dignity, their rattling tower rings, their though in poverty, brilliant parties, appears from our time and position as a childish attempt to keep alive a bygone greatness, which was doomed to destruction. But along with this external ostentation with chivalrous manners, there was a tyrannical domination of family and household and sometimes quite cruel oppression of subordinates. Philip the Fair had, although serfdom was abolished, but of the landlord's dependent peasantry was aspirated and beaten in every way in more or less disguised forms according to the government vacillating policy, as to sought support of the people or the nobility. Serfdom is the status of peasants under feudalism, specifically relating to manorialism. Boniface VIII was dead, 1235, the 11th of October 1303, and the new Pope Clement V, 1264 to 20th of April, 1314, had on the French king's request, settled in Avignon. It was now a battle between the monarchy and the self-filamentous monastic order, and the Pope was not slow to put himself on the king's side. The order were appealed, its fiefdoms retracted, and several of the chief temple lords was punished with loss of life and property. During this time, I lived, but though I had my estate not far from the dreaded Pope's residence, I was too small to incur any personal disgrace. My little possession was not a big estate, but had been handed down through our family during many generations, therefore I was allowed to keep it. It was only in my rank as a Knight Templar I was robbed, but it was, for my contemporary outlook, an outrageous abuse without precedent. I want to try to take out a few pictures from this period, to connect them to a whole, I leave to the reader's imagination. It's a brilliant tournament in Avignon. From Provence and Languedoc, yes, all the way from Auvergne is nobles and knights with great companions gather to participate or witness the festive weapons play slash possession. The stands on both sides of the knight track is crammed by ladies and older knights. In the middle of one long side is Marshal the Tribune. Here is also the ladies, that with her veil or her belt celebrates a particular of the contestants' knights, and primarily among them the beauty who has been appointed for the victory winner to transmit today's prize. First held the jousting. Some 20 knights in shining armor and swaying plumes rides up at each end of the runway and takes shape on the line. They pull their cross-cut sword and salute each other. Herald blowing a fanfare, and the two contestants' teams approach each other only at the walk, then a trot, which increased to a gallop, until they are in a cloud of dust and arms smash, whimper and cry clashes together. It is a riot, where hardly longer can distinguish friend from foe, all swirling together in a chaotic mass of armor blaring over the hard-hitting swords. I'm in the game and wearing a green veil, as the beautiful Alice Darroy herself attached to the my left shoulder, which she now sits as today's queen ready to hand over to the victory winner his prize. I'm strong and agile and a wise in all knightly sports. Myself, no shell fell from the saddle. Again I heard the fanfare. The battle ends and the stewards declare that my team took the victory. Those who have not got damage, will prepare again. From my team, by lottery to knights who must abstain from the play, because the number to be equal on both sides. A new clash with the same results. Personally, I fell two of my opponents to the ground. High shouting and waving greet the winners. Now begins the play's second act, a duel between two knights, each team nominated. I am one, my opponent is the famous knight Louis d'Aragon. We ride up, now armed with longwood lances, greet the ladies and one another, and stay on the fixed distance motionless as statues, cautious of the start signal. Fanfare sounds and we ride at full gallop toward each other. My lance floors and self, I get a sharp blow, as however, do not disturb me from the saddle. They hand me a new lance and I blow up again to seizures. A well-aimed blow to the chest plate on my opponent's armor raises him from saddle. He falls backwards to the ground. Cries, waving and fanfares, and I am the hero of the day. Several duels fought with varied success, but no one makes my rank fall. During trumpets blaring hailed me the winner. I brought up on the platform where the ladies take off my armor and attaches a robe over my shoulders. I kneel by the nice Alice, securing victory wreath on my head. It is an old tradition the winner gets to kiss the lady who gave him the price, and I rise to the procurement of what I consider to be my right. Then she puts two fingers on her mouth, a clear sign that she refuses me her favor. However, it is your veil I had with me, I say half offended. So be it, she replies. I was obliged, in the place I had today in the lining, to any of the contestants leave my colors. I have praised your strength, and I see that I did not misjudge. Ashamed I pull myself back and full of resentment I ride with my little entourage, the same evening to my castle. Some later, it is wedding feast of the Count Deroy and I'm the lucky groom. I have asked for Alice's hand, not so much because of any deeper addiction, but because I considered it to be the most worthy way to wash the indignity I suffered at the tournament at Avignon. My estate is admittedly small, but my ancestry so much higher, and the old count has not felt able to refuse my request. He has not consulted his daughter, the bride is beautiful but pale, the dark eyes half veiled. I have not yet received an open look, and hardly a word has come from her lips. But that I do not attach me to, now she is mine, and we shall probably turn together the dance of life, when she has overcome the shyness, which of course now mastered her. The wedding ceremony are held in the castle's chapel. When it is finished, I press my bride so hard to my breast, so she screams and falls powerless in my arms. But she will soon recover, and the party continues as if nothing passed. Among the wedding guests is a young squire, they call him Marcel, as so often he can approach the bride. They converse busy with each other. I see it with grief and feel a certain urge to take him as a puppy by the neck and throw him out. But I mastered myself. I will not make me guilty of any scandal. The wedding reception, with meals and drinking bouts, with dancing and bowing, goes on for 3 days. The fourth I lift up Alice on the saddle and ride with my entourage of squires and squires home to my castle. She leans shyly at me but do not say a word. The Castell's yard people and subordinates are bowing and greet their young gentry when we ride into it with flowers and with greens adorned drawbridge. My farm manager, the old Henry, complaining that the proceeds would not be sufficient for the new household. Have all properly paid their taxes? I ask. Not all, sir. Then let us take by force what is not willingly given. In many of them there is nothing to take. The long drought last summer resulted in crop failure, and the plague has made many of the cattle die. But for all, it is well not so bad? Certainly not, but they sighs however, from the heavy decrease and asks for postponement. The farmer Andrea is standing outside, asking to speak with your grace on his own and others' behalf. Has he not paid? No. He has a good farm and several cattle, I know. But he is insubordinate and incites the other. Trust he does not answer. Tell the executioner that Andrea should be given 20 lashes on the bare back. Then I shall speak to him. Lord, forgive me for telling you my opinion frankly as befits a faithful servant. Such he was of your father's men, a time when peasants were serfs. Oh, many a time have I unfortunately myself been compelled to swing the whip, but now not granted such an assault, then our gracious Philip has made the farmer free. And would a battered complaint to His Holiness Clemens, so would we maybe all get punished, for he is a strict master, who is the king's faithful and standing on the weaker's right. God's cross. I think you dare preach to me what I can or should do. Has impudence grabbed even you? You think your grey hair will protect you, but please beware so not my anger also affects you. You are welcome to beat, Stern Lord, if you please. God knows that I only wanted your own good with my bold words. Well, I suppose you have been afraid on old days. I think it tends to be so. I shall myself give commands of the executions." A moment later was heard Andreas' cries echoing through the castle vaults. Alice comes in with a frightened expression. "What's the scream?" "It is a defiant farmer who gets his deserved reward. For God's mercy, stop. Such may not be, I know, and do not interference with my affairs. Here is no one else but me to command, so much you know, my noble mistress." I take her tightly by the arm and lead her harsh out of the room. Some later, there is feast on my castle. My father-in-law, the noble Count Daroy, with housewife and large entourage have come to sojourn his son-in-law and see his daughter's happiness. A whole roasted pig with apple in the mouth is in the middle of the long table around which we sit on benches, and wine bottles goes diligently around. A troubadour in rock his entourage is singing a song to honor the memory of the persecuted monastic order. The violence and bloodshed King Philip allowed himself against the Templars in Burgundy and Normandy is portrayed with profound pathos. When the singing stopped, breaking out a stunner alarm, most of the wine agitated senses gives vent to the indignation which had long lain sleeping in everyone's hearts. Man shouting into the mouth of another, "Down with Philip, the temple breaker, the robber. Down with Clemens, the hypocrite, the royal creeper." Some rise and beat their swords against the wall-hung shields. I myself am wearing my white temple dress with the red cross and feel throughout this demonstration almost as a tribute to my own person, the only one here represents the temple lords. In a haughty manner I get up and ask for silence. I am no orator, but wine and high atmosphere gives me the words, and so I begin to depict the good that Templar's done for God's glory on earth and to emphasize myself as a worthy representative of the whole of Christendom. Extensive words. I blew up my mind to a greatness, which impressed at least for myself. When I finished it breaks out a new storm of clamor and clash of weapons. A horn signal heard in the courtyard and a well then enters a servant who reports that a knight named Marcel de Vaux asks if he can get this shelter overnight. "Ask knight to enter." "He is welcome in our team," I reply. He enters, lifts his plume beret and bows courteously. Where have I seen that face before? Is not the young squire from my wedding? Yes, of course. My father-in-law is immediately gone to meet him. All rise and greet the newcomer. Alice, who always sat in the seat of honor at my side, rises too, but takes her forehead and stagger. She is pale as a corpse. Two turns hasten and supports her as she walks out of the room. The knight looks after her, but otherwise it's just not any giving any importance to that house's landlady in a fit of nausea left us. The new guest is greeted with a glass of wine and the party continues. He explains he had ridden from Avignon at dawn and have bad news to tell. The Pope of King allowed to bring himself to sign an edict by which temple lords are repealed and all its fiefs withdrawn by the crown. No now have the right to wear the white mantle with the red cross, he adds with a glance at me, a look of what I think I catch a glimpse of glee. This news raises a real uproar in the courtroom. It closes together in groups, man screaming and hitting with your arms, you raging and cursing. It is an end of all order. No one hears what the other says of the deafening alarm that fills the air. I look after the newcomer knight to get a detailed explanation of how this passed and where he got his news, but cannot find him. He's missing. In the general uproar, he has gone out, perhaps to ensure his horse. I'm waiting, but he is not coming back. A suspicion grabs me. I start searching after my wife. She's not in her room. The bridesmaids do not know where she's gone. I scans the whole castle, but in vain, she is nowhere to be found. In the recreation hall, the alarm has stopped and the guests returned around the long table, where wine and trophies widely used. But the strange knight has not recurred. I send a man, a high-ranking official responsible for overseeing the supervision of royal or princely court, down to the guard room to see if he had been seen down there. After a while he returned with word that the strange knight had just riding accompanied by his squire. There arises a general astonishment. What does such a crime against the laws of chivalry, to a guest who has been welcomed, leave the castle without saying goodbye to the castle lord? After a while, the man returns and whispers in my ear that they have found the stranger's knight squire sleeping in the tower chamber designated for knight's night shelter. God's death! Let the saddle three horses and tell two of my best riders to immediately follow me out. We must capture the cheeky female robber before he got too big lead. There was a pitch dark night. We had to return empty-handed. 12 years have elapsed. I sit at a small inn in Normandy, not far from Rouen, and washes down eager meal with a little sour local wines. Host coming in, a stout man with small jovial eyes. I put to him my usual question, which I in all these years repeated in all the shelters, all cities around the country. Listen, my friend, do you know any knight named Marcel Davout, who is said to have settled in this neighborhood a few years ago? What did you say his name?
Marcel Davout.
No such I know not, but...
But, you say, you have perhaps heard of him?
No. But it occurred to me that it is very similar to the name of a nobleman who came here to the neighborhood of, let me see, there may well be a 10 or 12 years ago. But he was called Marcel Davalo. It put the wind up me. Do I have you finally? Haven't you hidden better than that, when you still would change the name? What do you know about him?
He came here, it was said from Provence, and bought an estate, yes, a really beautiful farm is it? And he has built on with towers and battlements and a moat dug around, so now it is as beautiful as a real knight house. Money he had when he came here, and of money has he always had plenty, he now takes them away, because the estate cannot raise much.
Do you know if he is married?
Yes, it is so, lord, for I have seen his mistress, and I say, that fairer woman may be looking for. But she is pale and looks very sobering. On the right track, it must be him.
He is also sobering and bleak?
No, see, you are wrong. He is a happy and funny gentleman who never saves the coins, but let them roll. It happens sometimes, when he is hunting, he makes my small inns the honor to rest here for a while and drink a bottle of Burgundy and wine with his hunting companions. Is it funny here, you may believe? Sometimes it happens enough, too. He appeared my host with his small pige eyes, and pulled his mouth into a sly grin. He spent the night in the guest house with any little maiden as he turned head on. But if she had gone here as a virgin, that shall I leave unsaid, he.
Where he gets money from, you said.
I know nothing about that. It is said. But one must do not believe everything nasty people says.
What do you say?
Have cross, just nothing. And no words for me. Here he dropped his voice to a whisper, but enough is said that he makes the roads unsafe. Not around here, of course, but in Brittany, where should not be advisable to travel alone, it said. Now he travels frequently in that direction and will be away for sometimes a month, sometimes more, and when he comes back, he's always in a good mood and then rich life at the castle, Maino, with a feast and other luxury. Therefore, once we've pulled our suspicions, if they are founded or not, that our lord may know.
What's his good's name?
It's called Ava, located to the south a few miles from here. My plan is completed. I have to dress me for woodcutter and go and seek employment. It's him. My plan has succeeded. I am employed at the farm. Finally, the revenge thirst be slaked which have burned in me for all these years. I have seen him right into the eyes, but he has not recognized me.
Her, I have only seen from a distance. She is tall and straight, the same beautiful figure as before, but she wears her head a little bent. Now it is merely to suit the times, not to rush ahead with the risk of failure, but also not to let an opportunity go out of hand. He rarely goes out alone, and to his own room, I've not admitted.
To sneak in at night is not so easy, as a squire is always in the room outside. Days and weeks go by, and yet have not an opportunity presented itself. The dagger I carry inside my belt thirsts for blood, and my soul cries out for vengeance. One day, I am occupied with supporting the wood in one of the gaps, which tends to be used as bedrooms for overnight guests. Just as I released my load in front of the fireplace, Wilmar sells in, goes to the window and looks out onto the plain. Now or never. I hasten to strike Ruel for the door and stand behind him. He turns around and we stand face to face. Now you shall be judged, villain, because you robbed my wife from me. Are you crazy, man? He yells, but at the same he must have recognized me, for he was white as a sheet in sight and staggered backwards. I grab a firm hold on my dagger. Kneeling wretch, and read your last prayer if you can. Help, help! He shouts, but at that moment I hit the dagger his chest. His cry has been heard, no bolts on the door, I walk with a firm step and opens. It is she, Alice, my wife. What is it? She asks with agonized countenance. It's me, Bertrand, your spouse, who took revenge on him there, who broke into my house and robbed you from me. Help! She cries. Do not yell, I say slowly, I will not do you harm. In 12 years, I have sought you to give him his wages, and tell you that I always had love for thee. I took you against your will. At first, I was sick of all your crying, but I never violated your honor, and those long years when I've on blistered feet walked around France to search for you. It's been dawned on me that no woman on earth was so dear to me as you. Farewell. I now go and set me to steward. Tomorrow I'm dangling from the gallows. Then remember me, I was the one who freed you from him there, he was not worthy of you. Part 4, we now jump over a book on the life on earth that went on immediately before the last depicted, not because it was unimportant for my development, but because it is not included as a link in the chain of lives when I have been in touch with her, which has always been my wife, and with him, who always wanted to steal her from me. During my fourth life backwards figured, I was a lonely man, with dreamy enthusiasm participated in the first undisciplined crusade under Peter of Means, 1050, the 8th of July 1115, and fallen, not yet 30 years old, in the battle against Seljuk dynasty. This is ancestors of today's inhabitants of western Turkey. This was in the plains of Nicaea, I think it was 1095. But we look up next life, and find ourselves in Rome during decay times. Imperial dignity had by tyrants and libertines, been pulled down to be an eyesore the noble Roman people, a power that was maintained by cruelty and violence of all kinds and who surrounded himself with creeping adventurer and willing executioners. Its protection guard against external aggression, was the Praetorian Guard, who certainly held true guard of the emperor's person, but many times themselves took the power in own hand, removed an unpopular ruler, and put their own favorite on the throne. Constant battles with varied luck was against the great Roman Empire neighboring peoples, the Picts and Scots, Germans and the Burgundians, and those from Asia advancing Huns. War was the spirit of that times, and human life had little value. During this time, in the middle of the 4th century, I lived Rome, or rather, I was born in Rome, but performed as a recruit Roman legionary a wandering life. I was with the army under constant feuds now here, now there. For long times, we could, however, be steady in large field camps, where we had a comparatively quiet life, as better housing and made surrounding with fortifications. In such a field camp in Gaul begins the part of my story that I have shared with her, so deeply intervened in my destinies. I want out of this life to tell only a little episode, for shown bravery, I had advanced to commander of a cohort. Means it was a basic tactical unit of a Roman legion after Gus Marius reforms 107 BC. And with this I was lying as the watch keeping at Rome, not far from Lugdunum, now called Lyon. Claudius was my name. One day an old local farmer came and begged me for protection against a band of robbers that for long had raged in the forests to the west. During the past year, they had first stolen his horse, and then even abducted his only daughter, 20-year-old Livia, and yet they had not found any trace of her.